Welcome to the Volunteer State. I'm Blake Topmeyer alongside John Adams and Adam Sparks of the Knoxville News Sentinel. And it is Florida Week, guys. I'm not sure that Florida Week means what it used to. I am sure it doesn't mean what it used to. But it's still Florida Week. It's still a rivalry week. Do you guys have the sense of whether this still feels like a big game, you know, like it used to from the 90s and early 2000s? Or is it more like, okay, it's Florida this week, brace for impact?
It certainly doesn't feel like the 90s. I mean, not even close. It didn't feel like the early 2000s either. I mean, I guess if you had to put all the Florida-Tennessee games of the last decade into sort of the same category, this has a little bit of that feel. No Tennessee coach has been around long enough to really drum up enough of a rivalry in this or familiarity with the series. And Tennessee's won, what, 1 out of 16, I think it is, yep, over Florida. So there's no reason to call it a rivalry. I mean, the thing was always with a rivalry, it has to be two-sided. And at this point, I think Florida looks at it as this is a game that we need to win every year. Tennessee looks at it as a game we sure would love to hope to win. And that's not a rivalry. That's a think we're going to win and hope we're going to win. That's lopsided. That's not what a rivalry is. It's not there. If Tennessee wins, it certainly can turn that way, though.
Yeah, I think from Florida's perspective, it's less of a this is a game we need to win and more of a this is a game we will win. Let's start thinking about other games on the schedule.
From Tennessee's standpoint, it is a rivalry. From Florida's, it isn't. I often evaluate rivalries based on how much you would love to beat a team. In Tennessee's case, I would put Alabama number one, and then Florida number two, and maybe Georgia number three. But Florida just probably looks at Tennessee, as Adam mentioned, as a game where, well, let's don't screw this up. This is a W on our schedule. It has been 15 of the last 16 years. So let's go out there and do what we need to do. And there's no extra motivation. And that's probably now the biggest thing Tennessee has in its favor is the fact that Florida easily could overlook it, particularly after playing number one Alabama last week and playing very well against it in defeat.
I'm not sure it was ever supposed to be a rivalry in the first place. Like it became a rivalry in the 90s because Florida and Tennessee were the best things going, certainly in the SEC East and really in many of the years in the SEC overall. Georgia was down. But when you look at a lot of the things that define a rivalry, I mean, number one, the history. Well, this game doesn't really have the long-standing history that like the third Saturday in October has. Number two, geography. Well, these teams aren't border states. You know, it's not a border state showdown like you would have with Alabama or Georgia or even Kentucky. And then number three is the competitiveness. And as you mentioned, Adam, Florida's won 15 out of the last 16 in this series. So, you know, it's missing, for me, the three big things that you would need to have this really be a rivalry. And to me, you know, the reason the rivalry started in the first place had a lot to do with the fact that it was Steve Spurrier versus Philip Fulmer, two people that consider Tennessee their home state. Spurrier, of course, born in Miami Beach, but grew up in Tennessee. He loved to needle Tennessee, two opposite personalities, I think, to the extreme there. And, you know, as much as it was Florida versus Tennessee, it was Spurrier versus Fulmer. And I think once you lost those two personalities from the game, combined with the fact that Tennessee started going downhill after the Fulmer era, it just, the rivalry started to fizzle away a little bit.
I think it is kind of coincidental that we have a little bit of two coaching personalities that are at least somewhat similar to those. I mean, Dan Mullen fills the Spurrier slot well enough, I think, of the charismatic guy that can needle at you, the guy that the opponent hates, you know, offensive minded, brash. He feels that fine. You don't have to have that on the other side. In fact, it's better if you have the opposite of that, which you had with Fulmer to Spurrier. You know, Josh Heupel's sort of a sincere, nice guy, shrug his shoulders. It's not a knock on him, but he's not terribly charismatic in the way that you think of a Dan Mullen. And so what it really comes down to is Tennessee just needs to be a top 10 team. That's what makes it a rivalry. That's what made it a rivalry to begin with. If you just have two teams that are both really, really good, then you have a rivalry. Right now, Florida's in that conversation. Tennessee's just nowhere near it.
I think if you talk about a Tennessee rivalry right now, I know fans don't want to look at it this way, but Tennessee versus Vanderbilt is a big rivalry. They pretty much have the same record in recent years against one another. It used to be considered a laugher for Tennessee. It's not that funny anymore. And while I would expect Tennessee to win this year, there are no guarantees. Certainly not the magnitude of the rivalries, but I think Vanderbilt looks at Tennessee. Adam, you covered Vanderbilt. Doesn't Vanderbilt look at Tennessee as its biggest rival?
Yeah, I mean, again, this goes back to my initial point that it has to be a rivalry, has to be accepted on both sides. I'll go back even further. I covered Middle Tennessee, MTSU, for 10 years. And if you had asked MTSU fans back 20 years ago, who's your rival, a lot of them would have said Vanderbilt. You would have thought, well, Vanderbilt doesn't think you're a rival. Vandy is would never list MTSU as a rival, but MTSU had competitive games and beat Vanderbilt, and then the series evened up on down the road. If you would ask Vanderbilt a few years later when I covered them, who's your rival, they would list Tennessee first, even though to that point they were not beating Tennessee. At least they hadn't in a long time, and Tennessee would not look at it the other way. Once the series evened out and you had competitive games, then both teams accepted that. One team gladly, because, hey, we're beating them now, and the other team and the other side begrudgingly. And I think that's a little bit what this has to be. Tennessee has to beat Florida enough times for Florida to say, okay, fine, we didn't see this for a rivalry for the past 15 years, but I guess we have to again now because you guys are good. But that could all flip this Saturday. But if you just look at the two rosters and look at the last few years, Tennessee's got a way to go just to fill out its talent pool to match anything what they have down at the Swamp.
To that point, Adam, I was talking to Steve Spurrier earlier this week, and I asked Spurrier, how does Tennessee make this a competitive rivalry again? What's the answer? And Spurrier said he thought it would be easier maybe than it used to be because of the transfer portal. He said if Tennessee wants to quickly, you know, ratchet up its level of play and maybe get to the point to where this rivalry is more competitive again, he said you got to raid that transfer portal. Get those players maybe from Alabama that are transferring that can immediately help you. Get those players from other, you know, big time programs that are transferring and can immediately step in and help you. Now, I think that's easier said than done. I think programs like Alabama, Georgia, Florida all did incredibly well in the transfer portal this offseason. So there's certainly, you know, an avenue that the rich could get richer. But I do think it offers you another avenue to increase your talent. Not only can Josh Heupel elevate the talent in his program by recruiting, but he can also go out and try to sign some impact transfers. He did that as much as possible, I thought, this offseason, added a lot of bodies, maybe not a ton of huge impact guys, but he added some useful bodies, I thought. But, you know, going forward, I think he can continue to try to do that and attack it both ways, on the recruiting front and then on the transfer front as well.
Well, and see, that would be the manufactured side of the rivalry that we're talking about, not the natural rivalry, because you're essentially getting mercenaries, for lack of a better term, in the transfer portal. You can't necessarily do this homegrown now, because the last time the Tennessee won back-to-back games in the series was 03-04. 04, that's 17 years ago. The guys that are on this roster now were toddlers last time that Tennessee won back-to-back games in this series. So some guys have been asked this week, Tennessee players, even ones that grew up in the state of Tennessee, you know, what about Florida and this rivalry and all that? You kind of look at them like, I guess if you say it's a rivalry, Grandpappy told me it was a rivalry back in his day, but not in mine.
It's interesting now how Josh Heupel, and you hear coaches all the time talk like this, when they're about to play a really formidable opponent, says, hey, we're really excited about this opportunity. I mean, that's what it is for Tennessee. It's an opportunity. There's nothing, no one looks at this as being a level playing field. Well, maybe, you know, maybe we'll get luck, or maybe we could just say, hey, we played a competitive game against Florida. If Tennessee plays this game close, fans will say that's progress, because they've lost by 23 points in each of the three games in which Dan Mullen was Florida's coach.
You can make that closing the gap comment if you play them to a close game. The infamous Jeremy Pruitt. Closing the gap after he got smoked by Alabama.
Did he mean a store, like his part-time job? He was closing the gap at the mall.
He was never known for being articulate, but he really went way out on a limb when he said that. What's he talking about? And I guess that contributed to the line of thinking that Jeremy Pruitt was not very bright.
Yeah, well, he also backed it up with his reasoning for knowing that they were closing the gap was he spent time on both sidelines, and yeah. he knows football, uh-huh. so he knows yeah. when a team's closing the gap. Well, it yeah. then later came into question whether he knew all that much about football when they
guys,
were...
Guys, this is an NFL coach. I don't think y'all should be disparaging this
yeah,
guy.
That's true. His NFL team is 0-2.
Well, that's enough about Pruitt. We'll get back to the matter at hand here. Florida coming off of its big game of the season to date, hosting number one Alabama on Saturday in the Swamp, an absolutely raucous environment, hostile environment. And for the final three quarters of that game, Florida outplayed Alabama. It won at the line of scrimmage throughout the last three quarters. If it would have done better open field tackling in the first quarter, maybe had a couple calls going its way, not missed an extra point in the second quarter, we might be talking about a Florida team right here and now that's coming off an upset win over Alabama. But nevertheless, the fact that they were so competitive against Alabama, does that make you, A, think that Tennessee's in for a butt-kicking on Saturday? Or does that make you think, B, that Florida might be primed for a letdown here coming off of the heels of a game that it obviously was very hyped for in number one Alabama?
I'm going to go A, and for a very good reason. Okay, so listen to this. Florida rushed for more yards against Alabama than Tennessee rushed against Tennessee Tech. That's pretty startling. Florida rushed for 246 against Alabama. UT rushed for 202 against Tennessee Tech. So that right there tells me that's not precision, that's power. You know, precision, you can have it one day and you can lose it the next. Power running game, offensive line dominating, that sort of stuff, that carries over pretty well week to week. And I think that's pretty concerning on both sides of the ball for UT, who has stopped the run so far, but they've stopped the run against, you know, two bad teams and one middle of the road team. They're going to have to do it against a team that just put up good offensive showing against the number one team in the country. That's why I think the brute force of Florida right now has to concern Tennessee.
Yeah, I'd probably go the other way on that. I think a lot of times you can see how inspired a team is by watching its offensive line. You might could say the same about the defensive front, but I've noticed that through the years that offensive lines are a good indicator. I think Florida's offensive line was really pumped up to go against Alabama's front seven. And as Adam pointed out, certainly did well against them, better than anybody could have thought. I'm just not sure they'll have that edge this time. And I think playing against Alabama, it's a very physical opponent. I think that takes a toll, too. I don't know what Florida's injury situation is. It's so hard to determine that anymore with any team. But I just think that will really work to Tennessee's benefit that Florida played Alabama last week. I don't think Tennessee's going to pull an upset or anything. But I think if Tennessee played the same Florida team that we saw against Alabama, I think Florida would beat Tennessee 5 touchdowns.
You know, the only time in the last 16 years that Tennessee won this game came in 2016. Tennessee won 38-28. And that was, you wrote about this week, John, that was the year of the quote, "Nobody has ever seen a duck pull a truck," from Florida cornerback Quincy Wilson. And then I guess the duck pulled the truck. Did you understand that quote, John? Because I'm still puzzled sort of as to what that quote meant. I guess Tennessee was the duck and Florida was the truck. And
yeah, and this little, it was the little duck that could. I guess he was trying to be creative in coming up with an idea to express that we're going to kick Tennessee's butt. Why? Because we always kick Tennessee's butt. And then he got creative. Maybe somebody gave him the line, "Well, did you ever see a duck pull a truck?" And he goes, "I don't know. What do you mean by that?" And then he thought, "Okay, I'll go with that." And the next thing you know, it seems like another Florida DB, I can't remember his name, said something to that effect. Quincy Wilson ended up getting a lot of credit for it. At the time, I remember there was some question as to whether somebody else had said it, and then he was repeating it. But nevertheless, it was an odd quote, and apparently it had a positive effect on the Vols because even though they were down 3 touchdowns, they came roaring back. And that's the only game Tennessee's won in the last 16 years against Florida, and it was down 21-0. And I put that game solely on Jim McElwain of Florida. He did not substitute hardly any in that first half. And I thought Florida just strictly ran out of gas in that second half. And you know how the kind of damage you can do against a tired football team.
John, Adam, and I, along with our colleague Mike Wilson, will have all the coverage from the Swamp on Saturday. You can check that out over at knoxnews.com. And, of course, we'll be back here next week to discuss it on this very podcast. If you haven't already, we appreciate it. If you click subscribe, that way you will not miss an episode of The Volunteer State. And if you enjoy what you hear, go ahead and give us a rating. Those ratings help us get in front of more listeners. Guys, we've made it this deep into the podcast here without discussing Tennessee's quarterback situation. That might be a bit of an upset in itself there, given the fact that it remains topic number one around East Tennessee is the quarterback matters. So, Adam, what's your insight there? Are we going to see Joe Milton? Will it be Hendon Hooker? Is it anybody's guess? And what's the latest with Harrison Bailey? We still think he's firmly number three on the depth chart.
Yeah, Bailey's number three. I wouldn't be surprised to see Milton solo, Hooker solo, or both of them in the game. I think at some point, Josh Heupel has to make a judgment call of whether or not that Joe Milton is going to complete any of those passes downfield. We've said it before, he has the highest ceiling. I think the offense can do some things with Joe Milton out there that they don't feel quite as confident doing with Hendon Hooker. If he can complete some deep balls, I think Milton is probably your guy. But if they think that Milton is just not going to happen for him because it hadn't happened all these years in completing those deep balls, then they almost have to settle for Hendon Hooker and say he can run the ball. We'll just go with him. I mean, health comes into this too. If Milton is 80%, you have to go with Hooker. And at this point, I sense a lot of frustration with Josh Heupel because he doesn't have a good option at quarterback. And even the options he has, that whoever he puts out there, he's not going to be confident that those guys can complete passes that he sets up through the play calling. And so give Josh Heupel a hug at some point before he goes down to Gainesville because he looked like he could use it this week.
I kind of go with Aaron Murray's opinion on this. Aaron Murray, the former Georgia quarterback, now CBS analyst, he seems to have a really good take on Tennessee football. He said at Tennessee quarterback club meeting that he thought Hendon Hooker gave Tennessee the best chance to win right now. And a few years back, as you know, when he was asked about Jeremy Pruitt being a head coach at Tennessee, he thought that was ridiculous. Paraphrasing, he didn't have what it took to be a head coach in the SEC. And lo and behold, he was right on the money there.
You mentioned Hendon Hooker's running ability, Adam. And I think for me, that's a big X factor when you're trying to determine between a couple maybe not great options at quarterback. If one of them can run better than the other, I think that tips the scales in that person's favor. And I know Joe Milton's not an absolute stiff back there. He runs it better than Jarrett Garantano did. He runs it better than, you know, Quentin Dormady did back when Tennessee had him as their starter in 2017. He can move around. We saw that on a long run that he had against Pittsburgh. But overall, I think we've seen throughout the last couple of weeks here that Hendon Hooker is a little bit more of a dynamic playmaker with his legs. And he led the team in rushing on Saturday against Tennessee Tech. And we saw in that Florida-Alabama game the effect that a quarterback who can run can have as a little bit of an equalizer against a good defense. We saw that in Emory Jones running the speed option, the read option against Alabama. Now, I'm not saying Hendon Hooker is the caliber of quarterback as Emory Jones. I'd rather have Emory Jones than Hendon Hooker, but I think they're similar type players. And so for me, the fact that Hooker is your best running threat, if you don't trust any of your guys to hit downfield passes, and from what we've seen, there probably isn't a lot of reason for Tennessee to trust that, then at least go with the best runner, I would say. And I think that's Hendon Hooker.
Something else to keep in mind here is that Milton, from what we understand, didn't have any first-team reps last week because of his leg injury. He may get some this week. That's sort of up in the air. There's a lot of issues in terms of communication on the offensive side, offensive line, running backs. Guys have been in and out. So whoever can run the offense the most crisp way is who you're going to have out there. And Hooker had first-team reps last week. He's going to have at least a good deal of first-team reps this week. You may just have Hooker in there because the offense will run with him, and Milton's been out there long enough that he's going to have some rust.
John, can Josh Heupel afford to go back to Joe Milton?
Well, in my column, he can't. but with the general populace, probably. Yeah, I mean, I just think Hendon Hooker's a better quarterback. I mean, we can talk all we want about Joe Milton's potential, and maybe 20 years from now when his son's playing, we'll still be talking about, man, that Joe Milton, what an arm that guy has. All the potential in the world, and maybe he's out playing on some rec team, throwing, playing quarterback for both sides. But I just don't think it's that close. And you brought it up. Hooker is really an elusive runner. He's a better runner than I thought he was. And he could turn a 10-yard run into a 50-yard touchdown run. And Tennessee needs big plays to hang in there with Florida. So I would just give him a shot. And Adam brings up the injury, which we haven't talked about that much, I guess, because we really don't know the severity of it. It's so hard to figure out how serious an injury is. You know how it goes now. Guy can start out and he can be week to week, and we never see him the rest of the season.
It's day to day for 2 months.
He's day to day for the season. So I just don't know if Milton, you know, is a good answer. Even if he had the edge on Hooker right now, which I don't think he does, but even if he did, sitting out the last week, and now if he's not practicing much at the first unit, maybe he's not ready for this. Another factor to consider, if Florida's defensive front on the outside, Brenton Cox and Zach Ricardo, play the way they did against Alabama, there's a very good chance that Tennessee's quarterback, its starting quarterback, won't last the entire game. The way Tennessee's offensive line is playing, and Brenton Cox played the best game I've ever seen him play against Alabama, and Zachary Carter is one of the best linemen in the SEC. So I think it would be challenging to get through that game, whoever the quarterback is.
But maybe, just maybe, the duck will pull the truck.
Oh, yeah, there's always that duck out there. You know, a duck in the swamp. I mean, it kind of makes sense more than it did in Knoxville. Oh, here comes the duck. Watch out. Don't worry about Smokey. Where'd that duck come from? Yeah, and look, he's pulling a little red wagon. Could he pull a truck too? We'll see.
I'm just glad you guys have said duck and truck a dozen times and kept this PG even by accident. Oh,
we were walking the tightrope.
I never even thought about that, Anna, but I guess you're right.
I did. That's why I haven't said it yet.
Yeah, let's get out of here before we screw it up. But once again, you can find all the coverage from Saturday's game between Tennessee and Florida over at KnoxNews.com, and we'll be back next week to recap it and look ahead to the rest of the season. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Volunteer State.